Leonard Maltin has been writing about movies for a very long time. In fact, I think it's been more than four decades since he started first putting pen to paper. Yeah, in the days when it was pen and paper, and writing about movies. Since then, of course, he's had a very long career as a movie critic, many, many years on Entertainment Tonight. But the thing that he is probably proudest of is Leonard Maltin's Movie Guide, which has been in print for decades, and it came out with a new edition every single year. Until now. Well, this is actually the final year. The new edition, the 2015 edition, will be published on September 2nd, so we're about a week away from that. And then after that, well, you'll just have to find Leonard online, I guess. I like to find him at home, which is why he joins me now here on the Big 550. Hi, Leonard, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
How many years has it been?
Well, if we're counting, and I guess we are, it's 45. 45.
That's amazing.
The first edition of the Movie Guide, which was then called TV Movies, came out in 1969. Some of your listeners may have read about the 60s in the newspapers. It was everywhere. I was a teenager. No exaggeration. I was 17 years old when I was signed to do this book by an editor, a very trusting editor at Signet Books. I was a high school senior, and a mutual friend introduced us. He was looking for somebody to do a competitive book to a paperback that already existed, edited by a man named Stephen Scheuer. And I used that book. I knew that book really well. And when I met this editor, he said, "Do you know this book?" I said, "Sure, I use it a lot." He said, "Well, do you like it?" I said, "Yeah, as far as it goes." He said, "Well, what would you do differently?" And I swear to you, Paul, I just rattled off these answers. I said, "Well, he only gives like two cast names for film. I'd give more cast names. And I'd tell you who directed it. And I'd say whether it's in color or black and white," which meant more back then than it does now.
Mm-hmm.
And what the running time is, because local TV stations used to chop these films to pieces. And I just answered all these things off the top of my head because I really did know this book, this Scheuer book. He said, "Well, how'd you like to do it?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "How would you like to do a rival book? That's what I'm looking for somebody to do a competitive book. You want to do it?" I sat there, it's fair to say, dumbfounded, and said, "Well, yeah, I guess so." And he hired me to do it.
Now, at 17, let's back up even further than that. How do you even come to this guy's attention? Weren't you writing about movies when you were just like 12 or 13 years old?
Yeah, my first article was published when I was 13 in a publication called the 8mm Collector, for people who collected old movies on the 8mm format.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I say, Paul, sounds like I come from the Cro-Magnon era.
Yeah, but I'm part of that same era, so we're simpatico here. It's okay.
Well, yes, there used to be a format called 8mm, and if you're a baby boomer like me, chances are your parents had an 8mm camera and projector to take home movies and show home movies.
Yeah, we had Super 8 at our house. But
oh, yo, big upgrade.
Yeah, you know, you could shoot 3 minutes of film on one reel and then have to change it and put in another one. And then my dad actually at one point bought a home editor, and we would edit these things together onto the bigger, I guess they were 7-inch reels. And so you could get maybe 40 or 45 minutes of what were then still silent movies, because we didn't have audio to go along with it.
That's correct.
So you were writing about the Super 8 or 8mm Collector. Those were not commercially released films, were they?
No, they were, yes. So what happened was so many people bought these projectors for the purpose of showing their home movies that several companies said, "Well, wait a minute, what if we sold them commercial films on 8mm? And there was a big company called Castle Films that did this, and then there was more of a collector-oriented company in the Midwest called Blackhawk Films that sold classic silent films, Laurel Hardy, Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, things like that. And so this magazine, which was entirely a labor of love, an amateur effort by a furniture dealer in Indiana, Pennsylvania, he started publishing this magazine, editing and publishing this magazine for like-minded people. He couldn't find any of them in Indiana, PA, so he started writing and editing a publication so that he could communicate with other people who loved these movies, too.
And so when you wrote your first article for him, what was the circulation? How many people saw what you wrote?
Well, you know, I don't actually know. I would say probably several hundred.
Oh, okay.
It meant a big deal. It meant a lot to me. There was no money involved. It was all, you know, for the sheer, you know, fun of it.
Even if it was only one copy, when that copy came to your house and it was printed and you could see by Leonard Maltin at 12 or 13 years old, that's a big deal.
It was a big deal to me, absolutely. This is, again, we have to explain, this is long, long before the Internet.
Now, to get back to your first
anyway,
book.
So to try to speed up the story, which I'm going to try to do, I started publishing a fanzine of my own around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I used to call them fanzines. Today it would probably be a website or a blog.
Yep.
But in those days, it was a fanzine. It was actually printed, first on a mimeograph machine, and then, you know, moved up from there technologically. And a nice English teacher at my high school in New Jersey, who I didn't have for classes but who knew me, had seen this fanzine, which I used to pass around the school, and she said, I have a friend who's an editor at Signet Books in New York, and I just think the two of you would hit it off. Here's his phone number. Give him a call and go to see him after school one day, which is what I did. And she was the matchmaker. And, of course, I didn't know what might result from this meeting. In my head, you know, dreams were bobbing about that someday I might write a book for this man. But, you know, there was no practical game plan involved. I took the bus over the George Washington Bridge and the subway downtown, went to meet him at his office. And I brought some issues of my magazine with me. And he said, what's that? I said, well, this is a magazine that I put out. He said, I love your magazine. He already knew it.
Wow.
And that's when he said, you know, did I know this book and would I be interested? So it's an absolutely true story. I swear it is exactly as it happened. He didn't have the nerve to tell his superiors that he was signing a 17-year-old kid to do this ambitious reference guide.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't tell them. We wrote the contract out to the name of my magazine, Film Fan Monthly, and so my father did not co-sign it. I was a minor at the time. Looking back, I realized the contract was probably invalid, but nobody seemed to question it.
Did the check clear?
It did.
Well, that's what matters. Now, here's what I'm really curious about. I think one of the reasons you're going out of print now is because the Internet has become such a tremendous resource for that. And in 1969, there was no such thing as the Internet. And in fact, even a book about movies on television, you had, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 channels in most cities, and they were all showing movies in the afternoon or late at night or on weekends or whatever. But you're 17 years old. How could you possibly put together a book about all these movies, which you could not possibly have seen by that age?
Well, I'd seen a surprising amount because I got the bug when I was 12 or 13, started watching movies incessantly. I did have the advantage of living just outside New York City, which had several full-time revival theaters, plus the famous Museum of Modern Art, which showed repertory films from its great collection every day. And then there were, in New York, there were 7 TV stations. That was a lot back then.
Mm-hmm.
And they all showed movies. As you say, round the clock, pretty much. There was the early morning movie, the mid-morning movie, the early afternoon movie, the late afternoon movie, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
And, you know, I became obsessed, as some kids become obsessed with baseball or hockey or any number of other things. I ate, breathed, slept this, and I took notes. But then, crucially, I had to hire people to help me. This could never be done as a one-person project. Or as I used to say, if one person was capable of doing it, they'd be drooling at the end of the process. So right from the start, I had to hire people, and I gave them credit on the title page. There was no secret that I was not doing this alone, and that's still the case up to this very day.
So even today, with all the resources that are available, you couldn't possibly see every movie and write about every movie or get all the details about the cast members and all the rest. It's just impossible?
Well, it's a tall order. I won't say impossible. But, I mean, if you want to have a life, you know, aside from doing this book, then, yes, I would say it's impossible.
How has your taste in movies changed since you started doing this 4.5 decades ago, or 5 decades ago, if we count the first time you wrote about movies?
Well, Paul, you know, I like to think I have matured somewhat. I like to think I'm a more educated film goer, savvier about a lot of things. You know, we all, and plus the world changes. Not only have I changed in these four decades, the world around us has changed rather dramatically. So it's not only what I think of the movies, but how the movies hold up after these decades. And that's always an interesting thing to explore. You know, some older movies look better than they used to. Some old movies don't hold up as well as they should.
Absolutely.
And, you know, a friend, someone said to me, it's like encountering a junior high school friend you haven't seen since you were a kid. You remember him being really funny, you know. Well, maybe he really was funny then.
Yep.
You have a rose-colored memory of him being amusing. You meet him today, and he's kind of a bore. You know, it's tricky because you just don't know, and that's how it is revisiting films. And when I say older, it could just be 10 years ago. You know, but you know, so you know, we do occasionally change our reviews, change our ratings. And I've done that over the many years that we published the book.
You know, I kind of lived exactly what you're talking about here recently because my daughter is 20 years old and she was home from college this summer and she wanted me to show her some more of what I consider to be classic movies. And there are some that do hold up. You know, I showed her Norma Rae with a fantastic performance by Sally Field and Ron Liebman. Still holds up to this day.
I'm glad to hear that.
All the President's Men is still a terrific movie. Even things from just 10 or 15 years ago were really good. But then I showed her 2001 A Space Odyssey, which I myself had not seen probably since I was in college. And oh my God, it was like watching a movie in slow motion, Leonard. All those things that I thought were really weird then are now really weird, but incredibly long.
Well, some people felt that in 1969.
Well, that's true.
You know.
But, yeah, our tastes do change, and sometimes going back and seeing it again is not such a great idea. Now, speaking of the volume of movies that are out there and whether one person could do it, if you just turn on your TV now and click the guide button and were to go through that, you talked about living outside New York and having seven channels. Now there are 1,000 times that number of channels if you include all the on-demand and cable and satellite channels that are available out there. When I do that, sometimes I'll be sitting around at night, okay, let's see what's on, and I'll go through all of those channels, and there is so much stuff that is absolute dreck. And I wonder, what percentage do you think qualified in of the movies that you saw, maybe not over the course of a career, but maybe over just the course of a year, that qualified as even three-star movies, let alone four-star movies?
Well, as you know, I'm very stingy with those four stars. If we give one or two movies a year four stars, that's a lot. I mean, Gravity to me was a four-star movie, a rare four-star movie. Life of Pi, you know, I mean, every now and then, but that's every now and then.
Yep.
And even 3.5 stars, which is a, you know, very, very strong rating. You know, not that many.
So there's all.
I mean, you know, I don't know percentage wise over the years. I do like to remind people who look. I love old movies. We've talked about this many times.
Yep.
You share my love for old movies.
Yep.
But you know, they put out a lot of junk then too.
Yep.
Let's not fool ourselves. We love Casablanca. We love The Maltese Falcon. We love Singing in the Rain. But the years that those films came out, there was a lot of chaff along with the wheat.
Absolutely.
So we only remember and cherish the really good ones. It's always been that way. I do think that in the so-called golden age of Hollywood, which I do refer to as the golden age of Hollywood, they had a firmer grasp the craft of screenwriting, and they had other things that compensated even when the script may not have been perfect or great. You know, there was that whole a cadre of wonderful, colorful character actors who could liven up a scene and make something fun and colorful to watch, even if the movie wasn't great. They had fantastic art directors, you know, who built these fantastic sets, and costume designers who, you know, made wonderful gowns for the women and such, and made everybody look so glamorous. You know, so sometimes I'll watch an old movie, and it may not be great, but I'll still get something out of it. I'll derive some pleasure out of it because of all those components that go into it. But I don't fool myself that, you know, that everything from the 30s and 40s was gold. It wasn't all gold. And it's not so today either.
Yep. There's been no era where there was a great number of movies that were terrific and a small number of movies that weren't, just because of the volume that was out there. And there's only a certain level of creativity that any town can produce going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I speculated a couple of moments ago that the reason you're stopping the print edition of the Leonard Maltin Movie Guide after the new one that's coming out on September 2nd is because the Internet essentially gave you too much competition. Is that the case?
Well, pretty much, yes. I mean, I don't need to beat around the bush, and it's no big secret. You don't need a psychic to figure this out. Just as magazines and newspapers, you know, have faltered in the Internet era, so have we. And it's fine for me to, you know, stand on a corner on a soapbox and say, yeah, but we give you, curated information. We don't just throw a lot of information at you. We try to make it the most relevant, user-friendly information we can in one tight paragraph. And we're, when we give you an opinion, at least you know who you're getting the opinion from. You don't have to agree with it. I don't expect you to always agree with it. Maybe you'll never agree with it. But at least you know where it's coming from, whereas online you don't know who it is who makes these comments, on various websites and such. So that's what we offered. You knew who you were getting your opinions from, and you knew that, if it was somebody's screen debut or if somebody made an unbilled appearance in the film, or there was some other fun fact about the movie, we would incorporate it in one concise paragraph. And we still have loyal readers to this day, and I hope some of them will be buying the new edition that comes out next week, who count on that. And for many people, we've been a mainstay on their nightstand and on their coffee table for many, many years. And God bless them all.
Yep.
For supporting the book all these many years. And you've been wonderful to do the book, too, and given us a lot of lovely publicity, which we've always appreciated. Numbers don't lie. And, our sales have been dramatically down the last few years. We could see this was coming because you can't compete with free. People can get all sorts of information for free. And there's a whole generation that's been raised to believe that you should be able to get everything you want for free on your iPhone.
Is that one of the reasons you had trouble monetizing your content online?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I know you came out, we talked a couple of years ago about your iPhone app and your website and all that sort of stuff.
Yes, and the iPhone app was a very good app. I can say that because I had nothing to do with creating it or developing it. But mm-hmm. The guys who did a great job.
Yep.
But they had a hard time selling it because people don't want to pay for things.
Right.
They want to get everything for free.
Yep.
And, again, you can only swim against the tide so much and so far. And so because we have a staff, it takes a lot of people to create this book on a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And we all, drum roll here, we all have to make a living. put bread on the table. And so, we need to get paid. And, it just wasn't paying anymore. That's the sad truth. But listen, I don't want to be negative about any of this because I use the Internet, too. It's a fantastic resource. I use it all the time. So I'm not knocking the Internet. And I'm not a Luddite who is sitting here saying, no, I will only consult books in my life. No, I consult both. I don't know why they couldn't, peacefully coexist.
Yep.
But the majority of people have turned to online sources, and they expect to have everything, in their handheld device that they want for free.
Yep.
And there are a lot of people willing to give it to them for free. It's never for free. You're looking at advertising, or there's some other way of supporting it. And we weren't able to make that happen. So there we are. But again, not to be negative, because we've had a 45-year run,
mm-hmm.
and it would be churlish. And foolish to complain about that, about a great, great track record, many years of happy publishing and great communication to and fro with my readers it's been a great experience.
And although you won't have this annual compilation of your reviews, you'll still be reviewing movies on your website, right?
Absolutely. LeonardMaltin.com. Come and visit.
Yeah. Although, I wonder what Doug Benson's going to do without the book.
Well, we have a year to go. let's just give it a chance.
Yeah, for my listeners who don't know, Doug Benson is a comedian who does a podcast called Doug Loves Movies, and one of the things he does is play, is it called the Leonard Maltin game?
It is called that.
Explain how it works.
Other people have devised other games from my book. The one is kind of like Pictionary, and one is kind of a bluffer's game where you try to invent a description for a title that's obscure. His version of the game is very hard to play. You have to really, really know your movies to play it. It's kind of like Name That Tune. You choose a film, you choose a category that he devises, and say the category, he had his listeners invent categories. One of them was called Kill 'Em Defoe, films in which William Defoe killed somebody.
Okay.
So he said, we have one film from 1998, one from 2004, one from 2009. The contestant says, I'll take the one from 2009. And, okay, fine. So then he'll say, all right, Leonard gives this 2.5 stars and says it's a middling thriller. It doesn't quite deliver the goods.
Mm-hmm.
And he lists 11 cast names. So then the first contestant will say, well, I can name that movie in 9 cast names. And the other contestant will say, I can do it in 8. I can do it in 7. And then you can call their bluff and say, all right, name the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Doug will have given them a couple of clues from the review and the year, and then if they say they can do it in 7 names, he reads those 7 names from the bottom of the cast list up.
That's the really frustrating part.
Yeah, so you don't get Bruce Willis out of the box.
No.
That comes last.
You get Bob Jones.
Exactly.
And
so it's a very challenging game to play. I will freely admit I am the world's worst player of this game, though it bears my name.
I'm not good at it either.
And but a lot of people are, and he has very smart stand-up comics and actors who are extremely good at this, who have great memories,
yep,
and who can play it with great skill.
Well, the nice thing about it is, as you say, not only do you still have a year to go, but you still have all the previous year's editions, which somebody could pick up and play the game as well. But
exactly.
The new 2015 edition of Leonard Maltin's Movie Guide will be out next week and available everywhere. Movie guides are sold.
Everywhere, any kind of books are sold.
Of course. And in the meantime, you can always find Leonard on his website, leonardmaltin.com.